This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I am Chris Policano. DC 37 represents 125,000 city workers, 25,000 private sector care workers, and more than 50,000 retirees. We're part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We're on the air Sundays at 8 p.m. We rebroadcast Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. We're also available as a podcast. Simply go to the podcast app on your smartphone or tablet and search for DC 37 State of the Union. And there are now more ways to stay in touch with us than ever before. You can always check out our website, www.dc37.net. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you have any comments about the show or would like us to promote a community event, please drop us a line at State of the Union. That's one word, State of the Union, at dc37.net. Let me begin this evening by wishing everybody season greetings and best wishes to all. Tonight we're talking about the rents too damn high. And joining us in the studio is the DC 37 Municipal Employee Legal Services Director and General Counsel Bill Whalen, and the Housing Supervising Attorney, Annette Benelli. Welcome to the show.
Welcome.
We're going to talk about the new New York State law that expands protections for rents. I want to take a step back. I want to talk about the Municipal Employee Legal Services before we talk about the rent. And Bill, I'm going to ask you to explain to our listeners, our DC 37 members, what the MELS program is and how it can help them.
Okay, Chris. Well, MELS was set up 42 years ago as a legal service benefit for city workers. We found that many city workers were experiencing debt problems, evictions, problems with their family court, matrimonial issues.
This was the evolution of the union. I mean, this was like we're doing contracts, and then there are problems members are having.
Yes, members were coming in with issues that had nothing to do with their job, but in their lives. We're talking about working New Yorkers, everyday New Yorkers, who couldn't afford attorneys, who were locked out of the legal system and unable to avail themselves of any protections or rights that they might have. The union set up MELS to address that problem.
And the first question I have is, I am a city worker. I belong to DC 37. I'm going through a divorce, and I've got no representation. I can pick up the phone and call you and or call someone at the Municipal Employees Legal Services and actually have an attorney assigned to me?
Exactly. We ask members to call. We have a screening unit, which takes roughly about 500 calls a week, 212-815-1111. And if any member or retiree calls us, we proceed to open a case and get an attorney assigned to help them. We provide legal services in a whole range of areas. We do real estate closings, sales, purchases of one and two family homes, bankruptcies, garnishments, consumer issues, credit report errors.
How many, just out of curiosity, I don't mean to put you on the spot in any way, shape, or form. I don't know is a fine answer. But how many cases are going on at any given time? I mean, how many DC 37 members are you representing during the course of a year,
for example? In the course of a year, I would say we're a little over 9,000 cases.
Wow. Good for you. Good for you.
We have 121 attorneys, legal assistants, and clerical staff providing these services for members every day. If, for example, in August, our housing unit, where Annette is a supervisor, we were in court for over 386 court appearances for members. That's a tremendous number of families that we were representing to stop evictions for.
212-815-1111 is the number for the Municipal Employees Legal Services. Let's shift the conversation somewhat to the housing activity. The rent is too damn high, has been too damn high, and the deck, let's say, has been stacked in favor of the landlords, in my opinion, for about 20 years since the state passed a law that pretty much gave landlords much more leeway or much more ability to play the game on their terms. Annette, tell us what that was about and what's happened more recently to, what is it, level the playing field somewhat?
Okay, so in 1997, the state enacted the Rent Regulation Reform Act, which we call the RARA 97.
The RARA
97, yes. Kind of like facetiously, but it was a very, very terrible day when we had to, you know, face up to what the state legislature had done. They drastically changed the game then. They allowed for evictions based upon a rent reaching a certain threshold. They started at $2,000. So even though some people felt that $2,000 was a rent that was so high that, they wouldn't be affected, it
right.
affected the entire city. And it meant that there was a loss of thousands of apartments from rent regulation.
As I understand this, and this has always been confusing to me, I've been renting apartments in New York City since 1978. So the fact that I still don't understand this, what happened in 1997 was that if the rent on your apartment went to $2,000, it was no longer regulated. And, well, $2,000 plus you had to have some sort of combined income, and I forget what the number was.
Oh, okay.
And I thought that what happened was that those apartments could then be charged market price. I'm putting up quotation marks. And in New York City, that's a very high number. But that's my understanding of what happened 20 years ago. Is that, does that jibe with reality?
Actually, there were two provisions. One was known as high rent vacancy. So when it reached, when the apartment rent reached the threshold level, which, as I said, started at $2,000, and then that tenant vacated, the subsequent tenant, the new tenant after the vacancy, would not have any protections under rent stabilization.
Regardless of that person's income.
Say that again?
Regardless of the new tenant's income.
So in fact, I was no longer bound. As a landlord, I was always bound. You're paying me $1,000 a month rent, and there are certain regulations about how much the rent can be raised every year. Is that correct?
Correct. It was a percentage.
Okay. So now we go to a game in which if the rent gets to a certain number, the next tenant has can pay whatever the market bears, which could be $2,700 or $3,200. I mean, there was no regulation at all on what you could charge for rent.
Right. And I just want to contrast that with another provision that you seem to have mentioned, and that is the high income, high rent deregulation, which was a different system. So that was also enacted with RARA 97. And that provided that if the household in the rent stabilized apartment was making over, I think it was at that time, $175,000 for 2 years in a row, then the apartment would become luxury decontrolled. That's the words that they use to define
In the middle of my living there. So mm-hmm. so me and my the family income gets to $175,000 or over, and the rent that I'm paying suddenly gets increased to a certain amount. Is that what happened? I'm just trying to understand, because it was always confusing to me what they had actually done. But I know that over time it hurt a lot of people.
Right. So what had happened, I think the high rent vacancy decontrol law was more pernicious, because what it did was it incentivized the landlords to evict tenants, so that once they had an eviction, even if it wasn't at the threshold 2000 level, if they evicted them, then they could do an individual apartment improvement increase. So an IAI is the acronym
right.
for that. An IAI increase was something that a landlord could do that was not subject to an order that they had to get from the state agency. They just did the renovations.
Right.
That it could have been bogus. And then they inflated the amount that they allegedly did in the apartment to renovate it. So then they would be able to charge a certain percentage, which was 1/40th, of the cost of those improvements. So these IAI increases increase the rent. It could increase the rent by $400 between the old tenant and the new tenant.
And this really, I mean, the reason why I'm making such a big thing out of this is because this really changed the whole playing field for getting an apartment in New York City.
What it did was it decimated working class neighborhoods in New York City. There was a time when working families could easily find an apartment in communities where they had grown up, where they had their family roots. And this theft
right.
of affordable housing decimated communities and left working families with no place to move to.
To the point where Brooklyn is the most unaffordable neighborhood in the city. I mean, it's a very expensive place.
Neighborhood after neighborhood that were historically minority or working class communities are now off limits to DC 37 members, to retirees, and to working people in general. They cannot simply afford to rent. This was all based on this purported honor system by landlords, that they would do legitimate repairs and be able to substantiate the improvements justifying such a rent.
And they jacked up the marketplace. I mean, they jacked up what the prices.
With no application, with no review, with nothing. The new tenant was left with a proposition to sign a lease for $2,100 or don't get the apartment.
Right, right. So okay, so this year there was legislation passed by the state, which I guess is remedying that to some degree. Tell us what happened this year in terms of state legislation.
People voted.
Yeah, absolutely. That is actually true.
Okay.
Yeah, so once the Democrats took control of both houses, and of course we already had a Democratic governor, then the legislature was able to enact the Housing Stability and Tenant Protection Act of 2019 on June 14, 2019, with a little cleanup bill a few days later.
So what you're saying is elections have consequences, and one of the consequences of this was we were able to pass progressive legislation. Let's talk about specifically.
This was a revolutionary change in the rent laws in New York State, which had tremendous benefit for working families and for communities. This legislation put an end to the speculation and the gentrification of communities.
We are talking with Bill Whalen and Annette Bonelli. They are from our Municipal Employees Legal Services, and we're talking about the new rent regulations, which are designed to protect tenants like you. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care.
We're back. This is State of the Union, the DC 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. We're here with the director of MELS, the Municipal Employee Legal Services, Bill Whalen, and the MELS Housing Unit Supervising Attorney, Annette Bonelli. We're talking about the new legislation that protects tenants. And I basically want to ask whichever one of you wants to answer this, what are the most significant changes in the law? We talked last segment about how bad it had gotten or how it was tilted in favor of landlords. How has this evened this up, and what specific things should our listeners know about that they have the rights that they now have?
One of the greatest provisions of the new law is a limitation on vacancy increases. The landlords are no longer able to increase a rent at vacancy. If they do improvements in the apartment, these improvements used to lead to a $400, $600, $800 a month increase are now limited over a 15-year period to an $89 increase. So every 15 years, the landlord can do improvements in a vacant apartment and increase the rent $89. But once every 15 years.
But the $1,800 a month apartment can no longer go up to $3,000 just because somebody got out of it. Is that what we're saying?
Absolutely.
Okay.
The other tremendous protection and advancement that tenants got from this legislation is an ability to challenge their rent. Before, when a tenant suspected wrongdoing or foul play by the landlord and what they were being charged, they were really limited as to how far they could look back at that apartment to see if there was an illegal increase. Now, that's been greatly expanded. It used to be a 4-year period, which was very strictly construed against tenants. Now, tenants have tremendous ability to have their rents challenged and reviewed to determine if they're being overcharged. And if they're being overcharged, the landlord has to pay them back the overcharge with treble damage penalties.
Which is like three times the amount.
Three times the overcharge.
So in other words, if I am looking at an apartment and a previous tenant has been there for 5 years and is paying some amount, you can now go back to that to the tenant before that tenant and say what that person had been paying, and then that somehow affects how much can be raised. I'm trying to understand the look back thing, because I can see a situation where a guy's paying $800 and then under this thing, the next tenant was paying $1,700 because they jacked up the rent to $1,700. And then that person stays there for 5 years. Under the previous way, you couldn't look back at what the previous person had paid to know that the rent had been jacked up at some point in the last. Am I making sense?
Yes. I mean, so the only way you could look back when there was a jump in the rent in your circumstance that you mentioned from 800 to 1700.
Right.
You can't just say that there was a very large increase in the rent. You have to also show some fraudulent scheme by the landlord to deregulate the apartment. In other words, in a scheme by the landlord to get up to that threshold that we were talking about before, the $2,000 high rent vacancy decontrol threshold.
And this goes back to the idea of, well, I've made all these improvements. Oh, really? Is that really gold you've lined the apartment with, or is it brass?
Right. So this 4-year rule protected landlords. It was like amnesty. So once they could hide their wrongdoing for 4 years, they were free. Their crime was never going to be looked at.
Okay.
But now, in 2019, with this change in the law, the landlord's wrongdoings that they committed over 4 years ago are now going to be challenged.
So my sense is that this helps people looking for apartments. Does this help a person who is in an apartment? I mean,
absolutely.
Okay.
Because the landlords don't have the same incentive that they had prior to June 14, 2019 to evict people. Now, when they evict someone, as Bill mentioned, the most they're going to get as an increase is going to be
$89.
Before, it could be hundreds of dollars.
Right.
But now it's very, very limited because the IAIs that we spoke about before are limited, and the most they're going to be able to get is $89.
So if you're out there and you're listening and you're wondering how the Municipal Employees Legal Services can help you, the first thing to do is to pick up the phone, 212-815-1111. If you want some more information about the Municipal Employees Legal Services, you can go to the DC 37 website at www.dc37.net. I'm sure the landlords are not very happy about this legislation.
Tears I'm not so worried about, because 20 years ago, when RA-RA 97 was enacted, the tenants and the tenants' bar were crying because it was really draconian. It was a horrible day. And
as Bill says, it changed neighborhoods. I mean, it literally changed the idea of where working class New York could live in New York.
Absolutely. And this law from 2019 just restores us to where we were prior to RA-RA 97, and also has a few more procedural benefits for tenants that are contained in another law that doesn't have to do with rent stabilization. It has to do with the law governing procedure and housing courts. Plus, the upstate folks also got some benefits with other statutes. So, for example, when the landlord wanted to evict somebody upstate, or even, say, in Yonkers or Westchester,
right,
some of our members live there, if the landlord wants to evict someone who's been living in an apartment unregulated for over 2 years, they, under the old law, only had to serve a 30-day notice to the tenant. But now, if the tenant's been living there for more than 2 years, or has a lease for more than 2 years, then the landlord has to serve a 90-day notice. So it's a big protection for the upstaters. And we tenants down here also got our protections expanded. So it was a big win for tenants, and it restored us to the way we were before 1997. And as I said, also increased a few more protections.
Are there other protections you want to talk about here?
Yes. You may have heard of preferential rents that landlords in rent-stabilized apartments were charging rent-stabilized tenants. A preferential rent was a rent lower than the legal regulated rent that the landlord was allowed to charge. So you might say to yourself, well, why was the landlord charging this lower rent? The beauty of the preferential rent to the landlord was that when that tenant vacated, then there was a period of vacancy, and then the landlord was allowed to do vacancy increases, like an increase would occur during the vacancy that was included in the calculation of the next person's rent. And in addition to that, those tenants who were receiving the preferential rent didn't have an incentive to find out what was the rent before them. They were just lulled into, you know, this happy feeling that, wow, my rent is low, I don't have to worry about it. But in fact, that preferential rent was only going to last for the term of their tenancy, their lease. Once their lease ended, the landlord had a right to bring the rent back up to the legal regulated rent. Under the new law, that's no longer possible. Any preferential rent that exists now is for the lifetime of the tenant.
Oh, okay.
We had clients living in apartments with a preferential rent of $1,000. They rented an apartment, $1,000 a month, preferential rent. When their lease was up in a year, the rent would be jumping up to $1,800,
$2,000. Nothing you could do about it.
Nothing could be done. And sometimes they waited for the 4 years to pass.
Okay.
So people could be lulled into a sense of everything is cool for me. And then when the rent gets jacked up, you're not able to look back and challenge the increase.
And, you know, landlords want stable tenants. I mean, they want good tenants. This sort of changes, this makes a financial incentive so that they want people to turn over and to move out, or they want to get people in and then hit them with this thing, knowing what a pain in the neck it is to move a year later or 2 years later, right? So you're saying $1,000 a month can then get kicked up
to whatever the legal rent is. And you're not going to challenge the legal rent because you're only paying $1,000,
right,
until it's too late to challenge it. This is a new day for tenants in New York State. It's a new day. And we urge DC 37 members, DC 37 retirees, to call us. Call Mel's. We will help you enforce your rights.
And have you seen since July an increase in calls on this as a result? Or maybe people don't even know this. And maybe
we've gotten a tremendous increase in phone inquiries.
Okay.
Tenants calling for advice, housing advice, without a legal case. They've gotten wind that things have changed. And they want to know what their rights are under this new law. Tremendous jump in inquiries.
And, you know, sometimes I get emails every now and then saying, why are you guys talking about politics so much? you know, this is not. But as you started in the, you know, first segment of the show, this happened for a reason. And elections have consequences. And who you vote for and what they're going to vote and what they are going to vote for matters.
There was a grassroots effort by New Yorkers to get rid of the independent Democratic group in the New York State Senate.
Who had sided with Republicans.
Who had thrown their lot in with the Republicans in the Senate and really prohibited any kind of legislation which would benefit tenants. And there was a tremendous grassroots movement in communities in New York City and lower downstate to upset the independent Democratic representative, senators.
And that is the only reason why we were able to have legislation pass both the assembly, where we typically had I'm sure this legislation passed this assembly many times or a couple of times since 1997 and got stuck in the Senate. And now that changed dramatically in our favor.
Yes. I just wanted to mention one other really big provision from this new law, and that is that the major capital improvement increase was also limited. A lot of rent-stabilized tenants are, you know, hit with these large increases because the landlord, say, puts on a new roof on the building or installs a new boiler, and then the landlord was allowed under the old law to increase the rent forever, even after that expense was already covered by the increase in the rent.
So the landlord paid for the boiler, but the rent stayed higher Okay, I hear what you're saying.
Permanently, which didn't make any sense.
Right.
Now the cost of that major capital improvement is amortized over a set period of years, and at the end of that period, then the MCI increase goes away, which makes sense. So if the landlord now has an incentive still to do capital improvements in the building, but the landlord's not going to get a windfall from it. The landlord's just going to...
Do tenants traditionally get notified of that kind of improvement? Like if I'm in a building where my roof has got problems, the landlord then comes to the tenants association or sends a notice to each tenant saying that there needs to be this expense and that's going to be reflected in your rent?
Is that... No, it's a procedure before the Division of Housing and Community Renewal, the state agency that regulates rent stabilized apartments. The landlord will on its own decide to install something that's going to benefit the whole building.
Right.
And then has to submit an application to the state agency asking for the increase.
Gotcha.
Now, under the new law, the state agency has to set a table of like what improvements are going to cost what, whereas before, I understand there wasn't any such table. So once the agency reviews it, the tenants are also entitled to answer those applications, to oppose those applications. But once they were granted, there was an MCI order that increased the rent, and the amount of the increase was capped at 6% of the tenant's rent. Now the cap has been reduced to 2%. So not only is the MCI increase limited in time, it's also limited in the amount, only 2%.
We're talking with Bill Whalen and Annette,
Benelli.
Annette Benelli from the Municipal Employees Legal Services. That's just about all the time we've got. I've got to do a couple of announcements. I want to thank you both for explaining this to us. It sounds like a huge win for tenants, and the landlords are crying in their beers since this summer.
Thank you, Chris.
We've got a couple of announcements. The Education Fund is accepting applications for classes in the winter 2020 cycle, which begins in January. To submit an application, visit www.dc37.net. And for more information, call 212-815-1700. Bill, you said something about an upcoming financial empowerment.
The Education Fund is sponsoring a financial empowerment workshop, which will help members with financial management, budgeting, credit counseling, how to improve their credit score, a whole host of educational opportunities for working families.
For more information about that, please call 212-815-1700. Ask for information about the Financial Empowerment Workshop. Also, if you want advice on attending college, make an appointment with a CUNY counselor or a DC 37 counselor by calling 212-815-1700. That's it for the show. Season's greetings, everybody. The engineer is Andrea Minocchio. The producer is Rudy Orozco. I'm Chris Policano. Until next time, ciao. We'll be right back.